Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I'm going to cover in this audio Ezra chapter 8, verses 1 through 36, the entire chapter. I'll call this chapter Ezra Directs the Priests and Levites. Our context is this. In the last chapter, Ezra has been sent by Artaxerxes in 458 BC to leave Babylon where Ezra was and to go back to Israel to check on things, to reform the religion of the Israelites. Now, Ezra took some priests and Levites with him. Their return is described in chapter 8, which is where we are now. So let's start with Ezra 8, 1 through 14. Now, these are the heads of their fathers' households and the genealogical enrollment of those who went up with me from Babylon in the reign of King Artaxerxes. And, of course, that was in 458 when Ezra went back. And then, starting with verse 2, the heads of the fathers' households in the genealogy are listed, and I'm not going to read them all to you. Ezra goes on for 13 more verses down to verse 14, listing all the names of the family heads of those who went with him. Now, to summarize what is contained in this genealogy, we see that most of the names are related to families who had returned previously under Zerubbabel. Remember, the first return happened in 538 BC. Now we're in 458, so that's 80 years earlier. But still, most of the family names are the same, or at least related. And so that shows that there was a certain core number of families in the tribe of the Levites that wanted to go back to Israel. If you compare, I'm not going to do this, but if you go back to Ezra 2, verses 3 through 15, there's a genealogy of the families who went back with Zerubbabel in 538. And if you compare those names with the genealogy here in Ezra 8, you'll see that many of them are the same. Now, the total number of men who returned in this Ezra 8 genealogy is 1,514, 18 heads of families, and 1,496 other men. Now, later on in verses 15 through 20, we're going to have 250 Levites who assembled later. You add those 258 to the 1,496, and you come up with a total number of men, 1,772. Then if you add women and children, the group returning with Ezra may have totaled between 4,000 and 5,000. That's a reasonable estimate. Now, that's much smaller than the near 50,000 who came back on the first return 80 years earlier under Zerubbabel. We get that number in Ezra 2, verses 64 and 65. The whole combined assembly numbered 42,360, not including their 7,337 male and female slaves and their 200 male and female singers. You add those three numbers up, 42,360 plus 7,337 plus 200, and you get 49,897, which, just for memory's sake, we'll round off to 50,000 compared to 1,500 who came with Ezra. So it's a big difference. We go now to Ezra 8, verses 15 through 20. Now I, and this is Ezra speaking in the first person, I, Ezra, assembled them at the river that runs to Ahava, where we camped for 3 days. Now the location of Ahava is unknown. BibleAtlas.org puts it about 150 miles upriver from Babylon on the Euphrates, but the map has a question mark, so they're not really sure exactly where it is, but that makes sense. It's on the way. They get to Ahava, and Ezra looks around at his traveling companions, and he says, I don't see any Levites here. There were priests there. It says in verse 15, I observed the people and the priest. I did not find any Levites there. So he's short of Levites. Now, some have speculated this is reasonable, that there would not be Levites there, because Levites would have a difficult time in the new land. They would have to be involved in the disciplined ministry of temple service, and it's a startup situation. They're just starting the temple. There might not be a lot of wealth to support them with the tithe system that had been set up. Well, so Ezra had zero Levites. Zerubbabel had only less than 1.5% of his exiles, his returnees, that were Levites, according to Walford and Zuck. So zero Levites. He did have some priests, as I said earlier. Now, the trip would have been futile without Levites and temple servants. The Nethinim, who helped the Levites, we'll talk about them in just a minute. The trip would have been useless, because you can't run a temple without Levites. So we continue with Ezra 8, verse 16. Ezra says, "So I sent for Eliezer, bunch of names, leading men, and for Joiarib and Elnathan, teachers. I sent them to Iddo, the leading man at the place Casiphia." Now, Casiphia is also unknown. Nobody knows where that is. "And I told them what to say to Iddo and his brothers, the temple servants, at the place Casiphia." So basically, Ezra sends a whole bunch of leading men. Not just one, not just two, but let me count them here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. He sent a delegation of 11 people to Iddo, the chief honcho at Casiphia, and says, "We need some of your Levites." That's pretty serious. 11 people coming as a delegation. Verse 18, Ezra 8. "According to the good hand of our God upon us, they brought us a man of insight." That's Iddo and his friends. "Brought us a man of insight of the sons of Mali, the son of Levi, the son of Israel, namely Sherebiah and his sons and brothers, 18 men, and Hashabiah and Jeshaiah of the sons of Merari, with his brothers and their son, 20 men. Well, let me stop there. The Levites that are coming that Iddo managed to rustle up are listed here, none of whom, of course, are known otherwise. One of the family that is mentioned, or the first family that is mentioned here, is the family of Merari. Now, this is a good time to rehearse this. This needs to be known if you're going to understand the book of Numbers or the law, because the Levites are divided up into three families, three famous families, because Levi, the tribal Levi of the 12 tribes of Israel, Levi had three sons. We read that from Numbers 26:57. "These were the Levites registered by their clans: the Gershonite clan from Gershon, the Kohathite clan from Kohath, the Merarite clan from Merari." So the three sons of Levi were Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. Now the Gershonites were in charge of the tabernacle decorations, the curtains, the ropes, the coverings. They carried them when they went through the wilderness. The Kohathites were in charge of the tabernacle furniture, such as the seven-branched candlestick, the table of showbread, the golden altar of incense, and so forth. Moses, Aaron, and Miriam were of the family of Kohath. And the other family, the one family that's mentioned here, is the family of the Merarites. They were in charge of the tabernacle structure, the pillars, the bases, the frames, the pegs, the cords, the parts of the tabernacle that were needed to set up the tent. It's a little rabbit trail there. Now, how many Levites accompanied Ezra on his trip back to Jerusalem? The number is a little bit fuzzy. We read in verses 18 and 19 the list of Levites, and depending on how you read those two verses, you come up with different numbers. Kyle and Delich say the total is 40 Levites. Benson, the commentator, the Methodist commentator Benson, says the Levites are about 40. He kind of punts on the problem. Well, I get 41, so let me show you how I do it. This is my speculation. First, we have Sherebiah and his sons and brothers, 18 men. So Sherebiah is 1, his sons and brothers is 18. That gives us a total of 19. Then we go to verse 19, Hashabiah and Jeshaiah. That's two more. Well, let's just take Hashabiah by himself. That's 20. Then Jeshaiah and his brothers and sons. Jeshaiah is 1, his brothers and son are 20. So that's 21 more. So you add all of that up and you get 41. It's not a lot if you think about it. Not a lot of Levites to take care of the temple. Now, of course, there were some already there in Jerusalem. Not many, but there were some. Now, in verse 20, we're told that some other people came along with the Levites. These people were gathered at Casiphia along with the Levites, but they're distinct from the Levites. There's 220 of them. In verse 20, they're called temple servants. In the New American Standard Bible and also the Holman Christian Study Bible, the King James calls them Nethinim, and I think the NASB, in a previous passage, I think it was the last chapter, the NASB translated them as Nethinim. That's a transliteration straight from the Hebrew. Well, who were these so-called temple servants? Who were these Nethinim? Well, first of all, the name Nethinim means given ones. Nethinim, actually, it's plural, means given ones or those set apart, as gotquestions.org states. The Nethinim assisted the Levites, and of course the Levites assisted the priests, so there's sort of a three-tier hierarchy of people working in the temple. How do we know that they assist the Levites, the Nethinim? How do we know that they assist the Levites? Ezra 8:20. There were also 220 of the temple servants, the Nethinim, who had been appointed by David, this is King David a long time ago, and the leaders for the work of the Levites. So these Nethinim had been appointed by David and David's leaders for the work of the Levites. In other words, they helped the Levites out. Now, what is their possible origin? This comes from gotquestions.org. They could be conquered Midianites. You remember the Israelites on their way into Israel when they were in the land of Moab to the east of Jordan. And the Moabites allied themselves with a wandering tribe, the Midianites. And the Israelites beat the Midianites. In Numbers 31:30, we see the Israelites taking half of the spoils. The other half of the spoil was tribute to the Lord. And so the Midianites personally got half of the booty. And we read this, from the Israelites' half, take one out of every 50 from the people, cattle, donkeys, sheep, and goats, all the livestock, and give them to the Levites who perform the duties of the Lord's tabernacle. So now the Levites have got some POWs, slaves, and the Levites and these POWs helped the Levites do their work in the temple. It doesn't call them Nethinim, but it sounds like it. Another possible origin of the Nethinim were the Gibeonites who tried to deceive, well, they did deceive Joshua by saying that they were foreigners and thus not subject to being a local Canaanite, subject to extermination, capital punishment by the Israelites. If they'd have been across the Jordan, they would have been allowed to live. And so they deceived Joshua and saying, we came from a long way away. Look at our worn out clothes and our dusty garments and all this stuff they fooled Joshua with. And Joshua said, okay, I made a treaty with me. You hoodwinked me, but I made a treaty not to kill you, so I'm not going to kill you. So we read in Joshua 9:26-27, this is what Joshua did to them. He delivered them from the hands of the Israelites, and they did not kill them. On that day, he, Joshua, made them, the Gibeonites, made them woodcutters and water carriers, as they are today, for the community and for the Lord's altar at the place he would choose. Woodcutters and water carriers for the Lord's altar, that means in the temple, as well as the community. So that's pretty good speculation as to where these Nethinim came from, these temple servants. Now, the Nethinim helped repair the wall of Jerusalem under Nehemiah when he came a few years later. He came in 444. We're now in 458. Nehemiah 3:26, and the temple servants, that's the Nethinim, living on Ophel, made repairs opposite the water gate toward the east and the tower that juts out. Ophel, of course, is that boundary between Mount Moriah and Mount Zion, probably a fortification of some type, and the Nethinim lived there as they were working on the wall. We also read about the Nethinim in Nehemiah 11:21. The temple servants, that's the Nethinim, lived on Ophel. Ziha and Gishpa supervised the temple servants, supervised the Nethinim. All right, so Ezra has got his people, he's got his Levites, he's got his Nethinim, and we proceed now in Ezra 8, verses 21 through 23. Then I, that's Ezra, proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God to seek from him a safe journey for us, our little ones, and all our possessions. For I was ashamed to request from the king troops and horsemen to protect us from the enemy on the way, because we had said to the king, the hand of our God is favorably disposed to all those who seek him, but his power and his anger are against all those who forsake him. So we fasted and sought our God concerning this matter, and he listened to our entreaty. In other words, God protected them and didn't let anybody nail them, because they're going to be carrying, as we'll see in the next few verses, they're going to be carrying a boatload of gold, a perfect target for brigands and thieves on the road. But God protected them. And so Ezra starts out the journey with a fast, which is a good idea, I think. Then I proclaimed a fast there at the river of Ahava that we might humble ourselves. Fasting does that. Fasting makes you humble, because when you're hungry, it's hard to be proud. If anybody's ever fasted, just think about how humble you feel when your stomach starts begging you to put some food in it. Now, in verse 22, we read that Ezra was ashamed to request from Artaxerxes troops and horsemen to protect them from any enemy that might be coming. And there's plenty of enemies. Remember, they had to go through Syria, and Ammonites and Moabites would probably be around, too, as they got further south. So they needed some military protection, but didn't ask for it. Why was Ezra ashamed to ask for help from Artaxerxes, military help. Nehemiah readily accepted a military escort on his way back to the land 18 years later. So what's the difference here? Nehemiah 2:9 says this, I, Nehemiah, went to the governors of the region west of the Euphrates and gave them the king's letters. The king had also sent officers of the infantry and cavalry with me. So Nehemiah took help. He didn't have any problem. He didn't think that Artaxerxes is going to think that he doesn't have faith in God if he accepts military help. Well, what's the difference between Ezra and Nehemiah? Well, the pulpit commentary speculates that Nehemiah had not boasted before the king like Ezra had. Verse 22 in Ezra 8 says this, I, Ezra, was ashamed to request from the king troops because we had said to the king, God is favorably disposed to us. Well, I think about that, and I don't think that Ezra should have been ashamed of asking for troops because God works through natural means, and he could have just said, look, Artaxerxes, God is a miracle-working God, but he's also a providential God. He can protect us, and God uses means. He uses natural means all the time, and he could use your troops, and we could use them. But he didn't feel like he needed to do that. He preferred supernatural protection, and so he foreclosed a request of Artaxerxes for troops. We go now to Ezra 8, verses 24 through 27. I selected 12 of the leading priests, along with Sherebiah, this is Ezra speaking, Hashabiah and 10 of their brothers. I weighed out to them the silver, the gold, and the articles, the contribution for the house of our God that the king, his counselors, that's King Artaxerxes, counselors, his leaders, and all the Israelites who were present had offered. I weighed out to them 24 tons of silver, silver articles weighing 7,500 pounds, 7,000 pounds of gold, 20 gold bowls worth 1,000 gold coins, and 2 articles of fine gleaming bronze as valuable as gold. Bronze as valuable as gold, that's sort of interesting. Now all this silver and gold would be valued at many millions of dollars today. No wonder Ezra and company prayed and fasted for their safety. They were carrying a lot of money. Now I like the Holman Christian Study Bible translation because they always take ancient measurements, monetary measurements and weight and length measurements also, and transform them into English units so we can get a feel for them. 7,500 pounds of gold, that's just incredible. That's a lot of gold. Millions of dollars. Ezra 8, verses 28 through 30. Then I, Ezra, said to them, to the 12 leading priests, Sherebiah, Hashabiah, and 10 of their brothers, Ezra said to them, you are holy to the Lord, and the utensils are holy, and the silver and the gold are a freewill offering to the Lord God of your fathers. Watch and keep them until you weigh them before the leading priest, the Levites, and the heads of the fathers' households of Israel at Jerusalem. In the chambers of the house of the Lord, you're supposed to weigh them in the chambers of the house of the Lord. So the priest and the Levites accepted the weighed out silver and gold and the utensils to bring them to Jerusalem and the house of our God. Now the leading priests had not been picked up at Cassiphia. They had left Babylon with Ezra. The priest, of course, in the hierarchy, in the pecking order, they're highest in the ranking of officials. They're carrying millions of dollars of money, and the thought might occur to somebody, these guys could steal this money. Well, the way Ezra checked that is he made them weigh out the gold before the leading priest who were already in Jerusalem. And I suspect he sent a messenger on ahead and said, this is how much is coming. Make sure you get it when the priests get there. Trust but verify. These safeguarding priests knew the wealth would be weighed at the end of the trip, so they also knew there was no way they could steal anything. They knew they could not steal anything on the trip over, assuming two things. One, that Ezra had sent a message ahead telling the Jerusalem priests the amount that was supposed to show up. And assuming also that the priest knew that Ezra had sent such a message, but I think that's reasonable to speculate. We go now to Ezra 8, verses 31 through 36, and we will finish our audio. Then we journeyed from the river Ahava on the 12th of the first month. And think about that, that's 2 days before Passover. There's no Passover mentioned, so I assume they did not celebrate the Passover on their trip over. Although maybe they did, I don't know, doesn't say. All right, continuing with verse 31, and the hand of our God was over us, and he delivered us from the hand of the enemy and the ambushes by the way. The enemy, of course, would be any thief or brigand on the road, or maybe even as they went through the territory of Aram, Syria, maybe some governments might have the idea they could steal some money. But at any rate, they made it to Jerusalem. Now, they remained there 3 days, it says in verse 32. That would be for rest, I'm sure, after the long journey. Verse 33, on the fourth day, the silver, the gold, and the utensils will weigh down in the house of our God and at the hand of Merimoth, the son of Uriah the priest. And with him was Eleazar, the son of Phinehas, and with them were the Levites, Jozabad, the son of Jeshua, and Noadiah, the son of Binui. I guess they trusted the travelers for 3 days with all that money, let them rest up, and then they had a big weighing ceremony, because you notice it was not just a few people there. A priest named Merimoth, another priest named Eleazar, and then, of course, certain Levites were there too. Everything was numbered and weighed, starting in verse 34, and all the weight was recorded at that time. The exiles who had come from the captivity offered burnt offerings to the God of Israel, 12 bulls for all Israel, 96 rams, 77 lambs, 12 male goats for a sin offering, all as a burnt offering to the Lord. Then they delivered the king's edicts to the king's satraps and to the governors and the provinces beyond the river, and they supported, and those satraps and governors supported the people and the house of God. Well, they had to. There was a decree saying, you pay them. You pay. Remember in the last chapter, there was a decree of Darius, and of course, Persian Greece could not be revoked, and the decree said, this is what you're supposed to pay. Satraps, governors, pay to support that temple. Now, this trip to deliver all the gold and the animals for sacrifice took 3 days. It took about 9 days. They rested 3 days afterwards. They were about 100, 130 miles away from Babylon. Of course, they didn't go straight across the Arabian Desert. They had to go northwest up the Euphrates Valley, and then they had to drop down either through Damascus to the east of the Sea of Galilee and across the Jordan, or they could go into the Lebanon Valley there between the Lebanon and Anti-Lebanon ranges and drop down the Orontes River Valley and go through Hamath and get and drop down to Israel from the north. Well, however they got there, it took about 9 days according to Zulk and Walward. That's a difficult trip without a military escort. One of these priests that helped count out the money or to watch the counting of the money was named Eleazar. That's a prominent name. Remember the house of Eleazar was the third son of Aaron, who took over the high priesthood when Aaron died at Mount Hor on the Exodus, right before they got to Moab. And then that Eleazar had Phinehas, who exhibited the zeal of Phinehas when he stabbed Zimri and Cosby in the tent while they were fornicating, much to the disgust of God and holy men at that time. So Eleazar was famous. The priesthood passed out of his family for a while when it went to the house of Ithamar. Eli's lousy priestly sons were of the house of Ithamar, and then finally Solomon kicked out the last priest of the house of Ithamar, Abiathar, and Eleazar took over. Now this is, of course, in the 11th century B.C., or 10th century B.C., a long time. We're now in the 6th century, and 5th, actually, we're in the 5th century B.C., so we're talking about 500 years earlier, so this is a different Eleazar, but the same names are there. Eleazar this time is the son of Phinehas. The original Eleazar was the father of Phinehas. Now we see the same sort of animals that were offered at the dedication of the temple in 516 B.C. Now we're just having burnt offerings, not for the dedication of the temple, just for the sake of having burnt offerings to offer to God. 12 bulls. Well, the idea of 12 is there still, apparently one for each tribe. The Israelites are still thinking of themselves as a whole nation, the nation of 12 tribes, even though there's only two tribes there now. They have 12 bulls and 12 male goats for a sin offering, one for each tribe, even though 10 tribes weren't there. The burnt offering seems to be the prominent offering here, as typically. Whole burnt offering means a total devotion to God, as the whole animal is consumed in smoke and goes up into heaven, and so that symbolizes the dedication, the entire dedication and consecration of the person to God. It's always a symbol of religious reform. Verse 36, then they, that's the exiles who had come back, the latest group of exiles, Ezra's exiles, 458 B.C. exiles, delivered the king's edicts to the king's satraps and governors in the provinces beyond the river. Well, the provinces beyond the river, probably Aram, i.e. Syria, Ammon, Moab, Phoenicia, maybe eat them. Now, these edicts told those governors, pay up, pay for this temple. I mentioned that earlier. Let's look at the verses in the previous chapter, Ezra 7, that say that. This is Artaxerxes I speaking. This is in 458 B.C. because he's speaking to Ezra. I, Artaxerxes I, issue a decree that any of the Israelites in my kingdom, including their priests and Levites, who want to go to Jerusalem, may go with you. You are sent by the king and his seven counselors to evaluate Judah and Jerusalem according to the law of your God, which is in your possession. Then we drop down to verse 20 of Ezra 7. You may use the royal treasury to pay for anything else needed for the house of your God. Well, those governors aren't going to just take Ezra's word for it. Sure, Ezra, we'll pay for your temple out of our tax money. No, they got to have a command from on high, from the king of kings, the Persian emperor. Well, on that happy note, Ezra's done his job. He's brought animals for sacrifice. He's brought gold and silver into the temple, and the temple is being restored to its former glory. Remember the purpose of all this. We don't want to get lost in the weeds here. We want to see the forest. The purpose of this is the temple is the place where God dwells with his people on earth, which, of course, is his whole purpose. Ever since man fell out of his favor and his presence in the Garden of Eden, he was banished from Eden, where he could have walked in fellowship with God if he hadn't sinned, but he was banished from Eden. And so God, in order to find a place to dwell with his people on earth, he has to have a special place called a temple where there are sacrifices to take care of the sin of the people and where the Shekinah glory of God, his presence, dwelled in the Holy of Holies. So this is very important. So it's easy to forget that when we go through all the money and the sacrifice and the utensils and so forth. So ladies and gentlemen, I am now finished with Ezra chapter 8. In our next audio, we will turn to Ezra chapter 9. We will do verses 1 through 15, the entire chapter, and we will see Ezra dealing with the intermarriage problem. The Israelites love those pagan women, and that's bad business. We'll see you in our next audio. Hope you enjoyed this one.